Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world, and welcome to episode one of Dark Reading Radio at Black Cat 2016. I'm Kurt Franklin, your host for this episode, and we have a great episode set up for you. To begin with, Tim Wilson, editor-in-chief of Dark Reading, will be talking with Black Cat general manager Steve Wiley. After that, Marilyn Cahotas, community editor at Dark Reading, sat down with Kimberly Price, a speaker in the Black Hat 2016 conference, to talk about building a security incident response team. These are two great interviews, a great episode coming up, so let's get to it. We'll begin with Tim Wilson talking with Black Hat General Manager Steve Wiley.
Hi, I'm Tim Wilson with Dark Reading, and we are excited this week to be covering the Black Hat USA 2016 conference. This is, for us, the most exciting security event that goes on all year. It's a chance for us to spend time with the security researchers, the folks who really know where the vulnerabilities are, what the issues are in security, and really get a chance to speak with them at a level where we really understand, you know, what they're doing. Sometimes when us reporters are writing about security technology, we kind of fly through it. But at Black Hat, you get in depth, and you have a chance to really understand everything that's going on. We're excited today for our Black Hat coverage to have with us Steve Wiley, who's the general manager of Black Hat. And Steve's going to talk us through a little bit and help us understand, you know, what's going on during the week, what some of the key issues are, and what some of the big events are. So, hi, Steve. How are you?
Hey, Tim. How you doing?
Good. It's a wild week, and I'm sure you're already going crazy here. There's I know we've already had trainings and that sort of thing, but you know, maybe you can talk us through a little bit. You know, what some of the highlights are from the show, and you know, what some of the things are that you're expecting. You know, here still to come.
Yeah, that sounds great. So it's a busy week here at Black Hat. This is expected to be one of the largest shows in our 19-year history. That certainly was reflected in the number of submissions that we saw coming in for speakers to present their research at the event, which also set a new record for us this year. So there's a lot going on this week. We had, over the last 4 days, we've had, you know, over 70 technical trainings taught by some of the world's leading experts. And then at this point in the event, we're kind of rolling into the briefings. And this year we've got 119 briefings planned, so a very busy week. That's happening over 9 concurrent session rooms. We've also got 80 arsenal tools this year, which is another new record for us, really zeroing in on the tools for the information security professional. And of course, I'm excited, especially today, for, you know, Dan Kaminsky's keynote. He certainly brings an interesting perspective to this year's conference with his deep understanding of, really, of the internet's technology underpinnings. And he, of course, addressed the, you know, the future of the internet itself, and really the role that this community plays in ensuring its longevity. So there's just a lot going on this week, and we're really excited to be underway.
It's great to have Dan Kaminsky as your keynote speaker. I know that we worked with him at Dark Reading for years now, and he's sort of the guy where you just sort of open up the floor and let him talk, and no matter what he says, it's always something that no one's thought of before. He's just a really great speaker.
Absolutely, we're really thrilled to be able to secure him for this year's conference.
When you talk about the briefings, you talked about 119 of them. How many submissions do you get in a given year? How tough is it to get a talk at Black Hat?
You know, hundreds of submissions come in each year. I think, you know, on a percentage basis, we saw, you know, easily 30-40% more submissions coming in this year. So there's just a lot of excellent, excellent research to pick from across a very wide variety of topics. I think that's another thing that really characterizes the conference this year. We're really touching on a lot of different areas of focus, which is interesting to see. I think, you know, for us, you know, we try to draw out some key trends from what we're seeing in the submissions and hope that we reflect that well in the conference proceedings. So this year, you know, we had a lot of sessions, I would say, that fall under the, you know, platform security area, and our program reflects that. We saw more submissions than ever around vulnerabilities and defenses in top operating systems, virtual machines, cloud-based platforms as well. So there's really a lot going on around platform security at this year's conference. You know, unsurprisingly, we also saw a lot of submissions around the Internet of Things.
Yep.
That will certainly play a big theme in this year's event, as everything we know becomes increasingly smart. And then, you know, as I said, the topics really run the gamut, and that's, I think, certainly reflects the interest areas of the community. So there's quite a few great enterprise system-related briefings, some really smart research across all things mobile. We've even got a whole track of talks this year on human factors, which covers everything from phishing to the actual success rates of malicious actors dropping USBs in parking lots and those sorts of things. So really a lot of variety going on.
It's fascinating to me to look at the speaker list and people from all over the world, and you know, just you know, coming from you know, places that you wouldn't have we wouldn't have thought a speaker would come from. You know, can you talk a little bit about, you know, where do all these speakers come from, and how do they come to you?
Yeah, certainly. So certainly, you know, information security is a global community. And with Black Hat, we're committed to getting the best research on our stage each year. And, the international makeup of our conference speakers certainly reflects that. We have people coming from all over the world. Black Hat's also quite well known around the world. We've got a number of regional events that take place. We've got our Black Hat Europe event, which is coming up in November. That's in London. And then we've got our Black Hat Asia event, which just recently happened a few months back in Singapore. So it's the event is certainly well known on a global scale as well.
When you talk about the can you give the I'm not sure if all of our audience is familiar with the Arsenal. Talk a little bit about what that is and what happens there.
Sure. So Arsenal is a really unique component of the event. This is really, it's a highly interactive and engaging part of the conference where we host a actual call for tools, much like we would do a call submissions for a briefings presentation. The call for tools solicits applications for companies to present their tools at the event. So it's an interactive demo area. It's open to all attendees. It allows attendees to come up and actually, you know, see the tool firsthand, speak to the people behind the tool, and get a better understanding for it. So it's a really good hands-on way to come away with some good practical and actionable information at the event. And like I think I mentioned earlier, we have over 80 tools in our arsenal this year, which is a record number for us.
See, this is something that I think really separates Black Hat from, you know, all the other security conferences that we see out there. I mean, you get a chance not only to, you know, sit and watch a PowerPoint, but you can really interact with the speakers. You get a chance to actually see what they're doing and you know, kind of go along with them as they develop, you know, the research that they're doing.
Absolutely. And, you know, one other area that's, I think, that it reflects that this year, which is a new component for us, is a Kali Linux lab that we've put together. This is going to be running on the Thursday at Black Hat. We're working with the folks at Kali Linux to put this together. This is going to be a real hands-on environment, again, and open to all attendees, which is going to allow them to really build on their Kali Linux skills. Kali being, you know, one of the prominent tools for the information security professional. So that's a nice new component for us this year. That'll be running all day on the Thursday of the event.
great. It's interesting, and I could ask you more about the stuff that's happening on sort of the technical side, but I know also you're doing some interesting things sort of on the other end of things. And there's a career track that's being developed, and some things that are sort of, you know, helping people out with their direction in their security professional careers.
Yeah, so this is a new component for us at Black Hat this year. We do have a career zone in our business hall for companies that are recruiting for information security professionals. This year we've added in the career track, which is off the show floor and is open to all attendees again. And it's really a great way for people to focus more on their career path and opportunities there to really hone their skills. So this is a full day of content on the Wednesday of Black Hat. In fact, Tim, I think you're involved in leading a couple of sessions in there. So this is going to be, I think, an important new addition to this year's lineup.
Yeah, we're excited about being part of it. It's an area where security pros these days have so many opportunities to get hired and on the other end to hire people. And it's really exciting to see that whole track coming together. I'm curious too, as you look at how companies, the security technology providers are getting involved in the event. I know that there have been some things happening with startups and new companies. Maybe you can talk a little bit about how the exhibitors are getting involved.
Yeah, absolutely. So this event does have an innovation city area part of the event floor, really providing an opportunity for those up and comer companies to get involved with Black Hat. So these are potentially our next generation of vendors serving the information security space, and providing them a home at Black Hat is very important for us as well.
It's interesting when I think about the best part of Black Hat is always going to the sessions and really getting a chance to spend time with the researchers and that sort of thing. But it's also sort of an old home week for security professionals. It's a chance for them to get together and have conversations and sort of renew old friendships and that kind of thing. Are there any things you want to talk about that are going on there, just in terms of networking events or just opportunities for people to get together?
Absolutely. So starting today, we do have our reception, which happens on the business hall floor this afternoon. That's a great opportunity to do some networking. We have a full page on our website with all the various parties happening around Black Hat and DEF CON the other week here in Las Vegas, which is a must see for anyone here attending the event. And, I think it's important to note we do work closely with the DEF CON folks and Jeff Moss and really coordinating our efforts there, because this really has become, sort of Information Week summer camp for a lot of the folks that are attending, and there's really a full lineup of things happening throughout the week that we're thrilled to be a part of. I mean, it's ultimately about the information security community, which, certainly they will be here this week in Vegas in droves, so we're happy to be a part of that.
It's a community, when you think about it, that's evolved a lot over the years, in terms of not only in terms of its size. I mean, there's more security professionals than there ever have been sort of across the globe, but also in terms of the quality we see. There are a lot of young people coming in. The audience shifts a little bit every year. Can you talk a little bit about what you expect as far as who the attendees are and kind of what they're looking for, that sort of thing?
Absolutely. So, you know, certainly the briefings are the longest running component of Black Hat. That's really, it's been around for 19 years. And for those folks that are interested in that more, you know, very technical, gritty look at what's happening in the current state of the technology and the issues, that's really where to go. And of course, you know, outside of that core briefings program that we're running today and tomorrow, there's so many other ancillary programs happening around the event. We've got a very vibrant business hall, which has come on the scene in the last few years. I think we're expecting about 270 exhibitors on the floor this year, which is a new record for us as well. We've got people that come just on a business hall pass, just here to attend some of the free content happening around the event, some of the more business-oriented content happening around the event, things like the career track that we spoke about earlier. So there really is a lot going on. We actually just had our CISO summit yesterday. So as the name suggests, this is a program exclusively for CISOs. We had a very full room, very full house yesterday, and a very engaging conversation of people, you know, coming at this event more from the CISO perspective and really getting a deep dive into some of the issues facing today's CISOs around, you know, at large companies.
It's just such an exciting event. We really appreciate you taking the time. I know you're busy sort of here in the middle of everything to talk us through it. But we're looking forward to the next couple of days. And thanks again for taking the time.
Tim, thanks so much for having me, and enjoy your week here at Black Hat.
Great. Thanks, Steve. This is Tim Wilson with Dark Reading signing off, and we'll look forward to lots of coverage coming out of the show, as well as another radio show on Black Hat starting tomorrow. So thanks for being here.
That was Dark Reading Editor-in-Chief Tim Wilson, along with Black Hat's General Manager Steve Wiley. You know, one of the big important parts of Black Hat is the conference, and next up we have Dark Reading's Community Editor Marilyn Cahotas with a speaker from the Black Hat 2016 conference. She's with Kimberly Price talking about building a security incident response team. Take it away, Marilyn.
I'm Marilyn Cahotas, the community editor on Dark Reading. I'm talking to Kimberly Price, Senior Director of Researcher Operations at BugCrowd, about building a product security incident response team, learning from the hive mind, which Kim is presenting this week at Black Hat at the Mandalay Bay in Las Vegas. Welcome, Kim.
Thanks, Marilyn, for the opportunity to be here today.
We're glad to have you. Before we dive into our interview, let me tell the audience a little bit about you. Kim has over 13 years' experience in the information security industry, specializing in application security, incident response, and investigations. Kim got her start by pioneering the first security researcher outreach program in the software industry at Microsoft, then was later a principal investigator in the Zotov virus criminal investigation, and she analyzed APTs at Microsoft. She spent 4 years investigating product vulnerabilities in BlackBerry's security response team. Today at BugCrowd, she is responsible for directing the efforts of more than 28,000 crowd members, as well as optimizing vulnerability reporting performance for customers and researchers. That's quite a resume, Kim, and thanks for taking the time to give Dark Reading a taste of your Black Hat presentation. Let's start by talking about what you mean by hive mind and how that keeps software secure.
Well, when I reference learnings from the hive mind, what I'm really trying to highlight are the things that we can learn from other defenders to bootstrap our own initiatives. And you're seeing more and more information sharing among defenders throughout the security industry. But the idea for this particular talk came up earlier in the year when I was writing a series of blog posts on vulnerability disclosure. I was looking online for resources on incident response best practices and processes, you know, what to put in a public advisory, how to work with researchers. And I was shocked to discover that compared to network incident response, there was virtually nothing available to help companies build this crucial function within their own organization. And so I realized, even though I've worked in or with product incident response teams for most of my career, we never published anything that would explain what we did or why we did it. And so I thought, you know, let's do something to fill this gap and help companies learn from the experience of people who crossed this bridge and walked down this road before and have built their security response teams already. So in my presentation, the reason I reference a hive mind is I'm not going to be presenting one single right way of building an application or product security incident response team. I'll share a variety of approaches used by companies, large and small, because Black Hat attendees come from a widely diverse background. And the companies they work at will all have varying priorities and resource levels. So the goal is to provide building blocks to form the crawl, walk, run roadmap for these companies to build security response teams that make the most sense for their environment. And I'll also be releasing a number of free templates that companies can use and adapt in their organizations to help them get started.
That sounds fascinating. You've been watching this and been involved with this the vulnerability reporting for a long time. What are some of the biggest changes you've witnessed in the industry?
This is actually a deceptively complicated question. Some things have improved significantly, and others have gotten worse. But if I were to pick the biggest change I've witnessed in vulnerability reporting since 2003, it has to be the culture shift to encourage vulnerability disclosure. The industry feelings of hide the vulnerabilities, don't acknowledge they exist, obfuscate, don't ever say anything publicly about security that could be construed as a negative. That has, in many cases, diminished. And yes, there are still companies that don't publish how to report a vulnerability to them anywhere. And you have to persistently chase down who the right contact is, like, you know, being a private investigator on LinkedIn to find someone at a company that has security in their title and try to report a vulnerability to them. But that's decreasing. The growth of companies and organizations that have their disclosure policy and information welcoming the private report of vulnerabilities is growing exponentially. And I think bug bounties are speeding this evolution as the industry norm tips further towards acknowledging that vulnerabilities will happen no matter what. And that as a software vendor, you want to be told about them before they're used against your customers. So I think it's really that culture change to say, okay, we know the vulnerabilities are there, and we want to be told about them. So how do we make that possible?
You don't have to do so much explaining at the beginning as you used to, I would assume.
Definitely.
And to that issue, crowdsourcing today is pretty much of a well-accepted strategy. Even the government is getting into the act with the Department of Defense's Hack the Pentagon, a very recent example. But your Black Hat presentation is targeting a different audience, small to medium companies with small or overstretched security teams. Is there a difference in the way small companies need to approach vulnerability management and reporting?
There is absolutely a difference in the way small to medium-sized companies approach vulnerability management, and it's tied to both resources and experience. If you're in a small to medium company and you only have 2 dedicated security engineers, or even 5 dedicated security engineers, chances are neither of them are specialists in vulnerability management and reporting. They may be penetration testers, architects, cryptographers, developers of security features in the product. And even if you have the headcount to hire more security engineers, finding experienced product security response staff in the current market can be extremely difficult. There's a very, very tight employment market right now where the available jobs far outstrip the people looking for new jobs. So many companies running a managed bug bounty program can leverage that to be the front end of their incident response team to handle the initial repro and triage of vulnerability reports from researchers. So the crowdsourced model is in some ways helping that front end of incident response. And while that is a creative and cost-effective solution to bootstrapping your incident response team, the focus of my talk will be primarily on helping companies structure their in-house resources, whether they have a bug bounty program or not, to handle the vulnerabilities far past the report and triage phase through development and release of the fix and any customer documentation. So very much the, you know, you've received a vulnerability report, whether that's direct from a researcher or through your bounty program, now what? So that's the focus we're going to take in the talk.
So for the audience at Dark Reading who are listening to us now, who aren't in Las Vegas, what are some of the key takeaways from your presentation?
Well, I'll be talking about deliverables of the different roles seen in application product secure incident response teams and team structures. I won't spend a lot of time talking about how they differ from network incident response because it isn't really a comparative breakdown. So we'll be focusing on what the different roles are, discussing data collection and storage, vulnerability prioritization, when do you publicly disclose or release an advisory. But no matter what models I share, the goal is for attendees not to feel overwhelmed by the gap between what they have today and what I'm advocating and feel like they have to build it all overnight, but just to give them an idea of what they're building towards so they have a sound foundation. So in 2 years when they do have more resources, they don't have to rip down everything they've built because it wasn't designed for growth. So fundamentally, the takeaways will all be about how do you build something immediate that will still support where you want to go long term, and thinking intelligently about what data is important to collect now, what roles you ultimately want to have in the team, things like that.
What are some of the roles that a company should have on the team?
Well, what I've seen in several large enterprise companies, and keeping in mind, small to medium businesses aren't going to have the resources to do this, but what has worked effectively in multiple large companies is to have the technical engineer, the program manager, and the communications person working in concert, where the engineers aren't spending a lot of time having to write advisories or handle emails and reporting because their key focus is technical repro, technical advice and pen testing and taking a report from a researcher and not only ensuring, yes, this actually does what they say it does, but we also found a cluster of five other vulnerabilities related to it that the researcher didn't report, but we're going to put this in the engineering ticket that goes to the development team and we'll work as a technical advisor to the development team to get it fixed. The program manager is involved in prioritization, triage, working with the researcher that reported it, executive reporting, coordinating all the parts between the technical engineer, the development team, and ultimately, if external communications are necessary. In some smaller teams, the program manager will interface with corporate communications. If the security team doesn't have its own communications person who is responsible for interfacing with customer support to make sure customer support has the appropriate knowledge base articles to support the release of security fixes. And that's a pretty common model in client and server-based software. When you get into cloud-based and web-based software where you don't really have advisories. You're simply fixing the server on the fly. Customers don't need to update anything. It's a back-end fix. You tend to see a little less of the external comms focus and things going a little more swiftly into development. And so in some of those organizations, we see where the security engineer who's receiving the vulnerability report may actually also be the person that goes and checks in the fix for it. So they may actually be touching product code as well. So we'll talk a little bit about the different team structures and role type divisions and when they have been effective for different companies.
So what are some best practices for effectively partnering with development teams, customer support, and communication teams?
This is actually an excellent question because, let's face it, no one is ever happy to see the security response team. If they're emailing or calling you, means something is wrong and you're about to have to stop what you're working on for a feature in your new product to go fix something. And so the security response team never shows up with good news. So development teams often view security response teams adversarially, and in all honesty, that feeling is often reciprocated. So building a healthy working relationship requires technical competency, but also sensible business perspective and empathy. One quick example, if a vulnerability has been reported, the security response team has triaged and assessed it, and they're now logging it in with the dev team. If the security response team marks every security bug as critical, they'll lose credibility and damage the partnership with their engineering team. If everything is critical, nothing is. So in my presentation, I'll talk a little bit about vulnerability prioritization and the importance of conveying not just the technical details, but the customer risk to the developers, including things such as mitigations and workarounds. So the development team can base their prioritization around, well, here's a critical vulnerability, but we have multiple mitigations and workarounds. So, you know, perhaps we can, you know, schedule this into the backlog a little bit behind this other critical vulnerability. And now you're giving them, as a security response team, the information that helps them secure the product in a sensible way that doesn't completely derail future product development. When it comes to partnering with customer support, this is really closely tied to communication teams, as customer communication of security fixes is a core part of security response. The security response team is fundamentally deeply invested in the security of in-market products. So their focus is always on how do I secure our customers in the field? And this is such a focus that some companies have embedded a strategic communications staffer within their incident response team that is the liaison to the corporate PR and marketing. And of course, in smaller companies, looking for a technical program manager that has technical communication skills can be a stopgap. So that person can interact with the comms team to make sure that the right content is going out to customers so that it's not overly alarming. It shows technical and risk-based competent guidance for customers that clearly tells them, here's what the situation is, here's what the next steps are, without being alarmist. And that's a core skill that typically will fall to the program manager or comms person in the security team.
It sounds like there are a whole new different roles that are involved in friction between the dev teams and the vulnerability researchers. There probably needs to be a lot of understanding of what these roles are and what people's jobs are and how they fit together. Is there some kind of training that needs to be offered to the members of the various teams and constituencies?
Honestly, I think that would be beneficial. I have yet to find a great training that is focused on product incident response. And it's a little bit of like being the emergency room staff. You know, you went through your traditional medical training, you went to nursing school, you became a surgeon, but being a surgeon in the emergency room is a little different than being a surgeon in the main operating theater or in private practice. And so you end up finding that the people who succeed and thrive in the incident response team, they're extremely passionate about customer security and problem solving and running defense. And the idea of being put on a team where, you know, maybe they're designing features is a little less interesting to them. And so it's very much an operational role. And so it is a different skill set, and we just don't see a lot of training available focusing on that today.
Interesting. We're getting close to our time period, so I just wanted to touch base with you a little bit on a column that you wrote for Dark Reading a couple of months ago about vulnerability disclosure, why security vendors and researchers don't trust each other. You said the security industry doesn't need a one-size-fits-all vulnerability disclosure policy. It needs a culture change. Are you seeing any progress in that area? What more needs to be done?
Well, culture change is never fast, and it requires consistent behavioral reinforcement to build trust. And we're dealing with very large, complex organisms. We will never have every vendor or every researcher behaving in a way that reflects well on their peer group. But I do think we're slowly getting there. I continue to see increasing cross-pollination, seeing companies reach out to the security community to try and build a mutually beneficial relationship, whether that is, you'll see a lot of it, honestly, at Black Hat, where vendors are proactively engaging with researchers, whether that is attending talks, meeting them on the expo floor, or hosting receptions to try to engage in conversation. Also, there's a lot of industry initiatives that are actively seeking researcher participation. So the companies that are doing this and the organizations that are doing this are far ahead of the curve because they're recognizing that building the best defenses for their products means putting yourself out there and engaging with people who have the skills and ability to help, even if they're outside of your company, even if they're not bound by employment agreements, maybe they live in another country, you've never met them in person, but they're starting to see the benefits of that. And so, yes, I do see it still making progress, and I think we'll get there.
Well, I hope so. It sounds fascinating. But thanks for this great talk, great interview, and I'm sure your presentation was just as successful. Thanks, Kim.
Thank you.
That was Dark Reading Community Editor Marilyn Cahotas with Kimberly Price, one of the many excellent speakers found here at Black Hat 2016. That's it for this special episode of Dark Reading Radio at Black Hat 2016. Join us tomorrow for another special episode of Dark Reading Radio, and be sure to check at darkreading.com for Dark Reading Radio every month, where we bring you the best in IT security audio. For everyone at Dark Reading and Dark Reading Radio, I'm Kurt Franklin saying thanks for listening. Stay secure out there.